Thank you, Dominator. It's 1010 on WGN Radio. This is John Williams. We're here until 1045. Then we'll head out to Northwestern Basketball. Dave Bennett and Joy Myers with the call. Nice to have Doma T in the house and also Andy Mazur, who, Andy, as I understand it, has a promotion now. You're going to be the regular Sunday morning sports dude with Dean Richards. Is that right?
That is correct, yeah.
That's a great gig. I think Dean just does a terrific job. I've heard you with him in the past, and I think you guys get along swell. I think that's really going to be a good show.
Yeah, well, thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Dean's looking forward to it as well. He's been emailing me, and we're going to try to come up with a couple of nice little things to do tomorrow on the show right around 9 o'clock.
Let's talk just briefly about sports here, and that is the Olympics. The big question, I was at the Bulls game last night, mm-hmm. and just a real quick note about the Bulls game last night. So it's the return of Tom Thibodeau, Taj Gibson, and of course Jimmy Butler. When they announced those guys, maybe you heard or saw the game or read about it, but the ovation was fantastic. I was so glad to hear that.
Yeah, and they did a nice video tribute too.
Oh my gosh, so at the first time out here in Chicago they do this big video tribute to two of the star players of the other team. Mm-hmm. You just don't see that often. And the crowd loved it. And in fact, I was at the game. So I'm watching the players on the floor. And the Bulls are all business. We're all kind of, you know, doing our thing. But the Timberwolves were really watching it closely. It was kind of nice to see. And everybody seemed to, I just thought it was a class act by Chicago. The fans were warm. When Jimmy Butler first went to the line and made his first free throw, everybody kind of gave him, okay, Jimmy, that'll be enough of that now.
Stop it now, please.
Okay, we don't need you to go off now, which is exactly what he did.
Yep.
And if you had scripted it, you would have said, okay, here's what will happen. We'll bring back Butler just as LaVine gets his legs underneath him again. So it's the big trade, the two of them squaring off, and that'll be the defining moment. And that's what it was last night, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it came down to LaVine being the stronger guy in the fourth quarter. And, you know, they're limiting his minutes, so they have to really watch his time out there. But, you know, Fred Hoiberg was saying after the game how much confidence now LaVine is getting with not only with his offense but back on defense as well.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it was just so much fun to see the two of them. They totaled almost 80 points between them, and it was really Jimmy Butler at the end of the game and Zach LaVine scoring almost all of our points in the end of the game towards the end of the fourth quarter. That was the difference, including, so I just got a text message from a friend of mine in mm-hmm. Minnesota who was watching it on TV up there, and he said, how crazy is the Tibbs technical at the end? And I didn't know what was going on. We couldn't tell what the technical was all about in the seats, but evidently Karl Anthony Towns did something their center, so stupid last night. The Tibbs, ever the barking seal, just lost it. He was screaming, as I understand it, this is the way my friend tells it. Mm-hmm. He was so mad at his own player, Thibodeau was, that he got a technical for yelling at his guy.
Yeah, the refs thought he was talking to them.
So then Karl Anthony Towns, who was receiving this tirade from his own coach, comes up to the refs and goes, no, it wasn't you, it was me. I promise. They go, yeah, we've heard that one before. He goes, no, I did bad, and Tibbs is nuts. And they go, nope. Technical sticks, and that was one of the deciding factors of the game.
Yeah, it started to swing swing it back toward the Bulls.
Yeah,
Thibs is a little crazy, and you know he didn't get a video tribute, obviously, because he's kind of left the organization on a sour note. But he was interviewed by the television folks, and he thought that the video tribute was a class act. He said,
And you know what? He's getting the last laugh. Yeah. Not that the Bulls aren't going to repair themselves, but the Timberwolves, actually, with that infusion of Bullsdom, are doing very, very well in the mm-hmm. NBA, and that's new up there. Let's talk about the Olympics now. So the big question on Twitter, if you watched the opening ceremonies last night, is where was the people? If you watched the Olympics last night, and I don't know if you have an explanation for this, I'd be interested in it. You can text or call 312-981-7200 on the Olympics last night. Those things are always just fantastic. You know, some are better than others. London was great. Mm. Beijing was great. I don't know if Seoul was or Pyeongchang was in that category, but it sure looked lovely. But you couldn't find any people. It was like the box seats at a Yankee game. You go, I know that's a great view, but ain't nobody there. And the explanation I'm reading on Twitter this morning is that was the athletes. The, you know, thousands of athletes streaming into the stadium have to sit somewhere. Mm-hmm. So all of those empty seats were where they would eventually go. That seems to be kind of a hollow explanation because the athletes were kind of marching in. I don't know that they actually took those seats, but...
I think they did take those seats. My question while watching it was, it seems like the stadium should be larger than to just seat the athletes.
The athletes. It's that should be a prime ticket.
It's only a 35,000-seat arena, and it seems like that's a little small for some of the old, some of the older Olympic stadiums, and they're going to destroy that. They're knocking it down as soon as the Olympics is over.
Really?
Yeah.
I just don't understand that.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of those old stadiums and some of those old villages become ghost towns.
Right.
I mean, they generally don't have any practical purpose afterwards. Maybe you'll save up, you know, the cycling thing or the skating thing, but usually those things aren't all that necessary, particularly when they're putting it in a nation that isn't as developed as, say, Atlanta or Los Angeles, someplace in the United States.
Montreal.
The flag controversy, we anticipated, and you got what you wanted. There was some scuffling. Imagine if the Olympics were in the United States and our athletes did not march into the U.S. flag, if we had some hybrid of our flag, if we had combined with North United States. As much as we love our flag and pledge and national anthem here, that would not fly. I understand the anxiety or angst that creates for the South Koreans. But the unity sure looks good. And there was Mike Pence, the vice president of the United States, who did not seem to notice that Kim Jong-un's sister was right there.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know that both sides knew that and that they had decided how they were going to play that. And I'm a little disappointed that the decision was not to acknowledge each other. If Pence had said, hey, can I get you a soda or whatever it is you people drink? Soda. Or if he had just offered his hand, or if he had said, hey, what's your favorite event? And then they would have translated that and maybe accidentally declared war. But I would have liked to have seen some sort of gesture that way. I was surprised yesterday to read how much criticism there was of Johnny Weir and Tara Lipinski's commentary on skating, which is the marquee event. It's just, you know, nothing but tension and anxiety and controversy skating every Olympics, it seems. The first day, people were busting them for being too critical of the performers.
And I think they were critical of what they were wearing, too.
What Johnny Weir was wearing?
It looked like they were getting ready to go out and skate.
I'm so past that. Here's what's going to happen. If you watch the Kentucky Derby or the Olympics in the wintertime, you're going to get a lot of clothing and hair from Johnny Weir.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't look at it, him, and you can or you can't, I think his commentary is really good. It's enthusiastic. It's informed. I think his patter with Tara and whoever else is in the booth is usually spot on. But so many people were falling that their description of that became kind of critical.
Mm-hmm.
How could it not? And then they got beat up that way. That's just one of the controversies these days. And I guess that's it for the Olympics. But I find myself each Olympics sort of sleepwalking into it and then really getting energized by the whole thing.
So
here we go.
Where's Bob Costas? He's not there, is he?
No, he's sitting this one out. He had a little fall, I think, just before the NFL playoffs started. And I think they kept him out of it because of that.
I was telling a friend last night about how at Sochi he had pink eye.
Yeah.
And they could not believe it. Or because I guess they had forgotten.
I think it sidelined him for some of the work that he was going to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing is I'm missing... it was nice to see Katie Couric back, but it just shows how they don't have what they need. They need a Bob Costas. They need a Matt Lauer. They need one of those big-name, marquee, really well-informed, affable interviewers. And I don't know that they... Who is the star media person? Maybe we'll discover that, but... I don't think they have that this go around. What they do have is that oiled up dude from Tonga. Get that guy a microphone. He could just sit there with that, you know, grass skirt of his and go, "Hi, I have no reason to be here, but check this out." And then he just interviews people.
Because it's exciting, and I had a great time watching it. But at a certain point, you are just watching people walk
good
around.
Good point.
So then he comes through.
And you're like, that's what I'm talking about.
Just anything else. Just liven it up a little bit.
There was a guy from Bermuda who was wearing Bermuda shorts. You can't make that stuff up.
Well,
it was 25 degrees outside.
I get your point, Griffin, but I also think, that's right, Andy. In this day and age, isn't it refreshing to see people from all of the world, young, bright, shiny faces of literally every stripe that the planet has to offer, come together for something? I mean, it just doesn't happen.
No, it is. Yeah.
So that's, right. You know, so I hear you. And by the way, the guy from Tonga isn't just eye candy. He's there as a legitimate athlete. He will be participating in cross-country skiing. Last you saw him, he was in the Summer Games in Taekwondo. It got us to wondering, how often do people participate in the Summer and the Winter Olympics? And it happens much more often than you might think. This guy has done it in 2016, 4 athletes from Canada, the Netherlands, the Czech Republic, and Tonga participated in both the Summer and Winter Games that were adjacent to each other. But this guy's so fantastic, they're actually going to create a Spring and Fall Olympics and have him just parade around, and he can, you know, shoot some hoops or do whatever he wants, rake some leaves.
There you go.
And there'll be a big crowd for that as well. Plant tomatoes.
He'll participate in flag flying, because we know that he has a real aptitude for that after lesson.
He's got that down. I'd like to see you do better than that.
It's gold medal in flag flying.
Hey, listen, I saw Hamilton. I don't know if you've heard about this show, but I just want to tell you, if you have seen it, or maybe better yet, if you have not, what I think is the best and worst of Hamilton in a minute. Griff, before you play that music, just real quick, Andy Mazur, one other note about the U.S. appearance in the Olympics last night, and that was...
Did you notice that they walked in with the nations that had a letter starting with M?
M, as in United States of America?
Well, apparently you march in order of what the host country refers to your country as.
Uh-oh.
And in South Korea, they refer to the United States as, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, but it's Migup, which means, in South Korean, beautiful country.
Whew.
So we walked in with the M's.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, see, this just goes more to my sort of big warm fuzzy about the whole dang thing.
I was wondering why we were in the middle of the M's, and I did not. I'm an uncurious person by nature, so I let it pass me by. I was like, this seems wrong, but I'm not going to follow
it. Well, there you go. Now you know.
Migup is beautiful country. Speaking of beautiful, hit that music, Griff. 3, 2, 1.
You'll be back. Soon you'll see, you remember you belong to me. You'll be back, time will tell. You remember that I served you well. Oceans rise.
That's the king singing in Hamilton. When I mentioned to Rokan and Anna DeVlantis one day early this week that Brenda and I, my wife and I, were going to go see Hamilton, finally, she said, oh, the king, as I was walking out of the studio. And if those tickets are high priced, the price of admission is worth it just to see that guy on stage. A friend of mine has seen it 3 or 4 times, and she said that this king, and she's seen it in New York, is the best of the kings she has seen. Griff, I presume you saw the same king. Do you agree?
I guess. I actually don't know for sure. But yeah, he was amazing.
And I'm glad they didn't overdo it, too, because he's so funny. He's so talented. It's such a rich part. And they just spice the show with it. They don't give him too much.
Well, and his song is so great, too.
It really is. And he's just so funny. I'll say this, though. This is what I say about all Broadway shows. The second act, not so much. Everybody comes out of that show going, it was wonderful. And it is. It's an event. But I think people are afraid to say, yeah, but the second act, we didn't need all of that. And it so pales in comparison to the first.
Huh. It's just not the experience I had. I think I did sort of start to find the structure of the show stranger than I expected, because it's just chronicling his life and you just keep getting more and more, like, where it wasn't as streamlined as I expected it might be. But the first 10 minutes of the second act were my favorite part of the show by far.
Refresh my memory.
It's when Thomas Jefferson arrives and really have their back and forth debates and stuff like that. It was so exciting and so fun. I just had a ball.
I thought Jefferson was going to have a bigger role in the show, but it's
a pretty big role.
It's Hamilton and Burr and Washington, but it's Hamilton and Burr. I mean, that's really what it revolves around. And that was another problem I had with it. The climax of the show, to me, is, I mean, this is the story of, all, at the end of the day, the duel. It's more than that, of course. It's about different views on government and the ambitions of Alexander Hamilton, but we're all waiting for that duel. And when it comes, while they stage it well, we've already seen two before. Spoiler alert, there's a duel, and one of them gets shot. And I was disappointed by the second act and really that moment. And then the end, I thought it just sort of trailed off. The show I thought was quite anticlimactic in its finish. I'm the only person in the United States of America, I think, to have these feelings. But I'm liberating you now to say them because I don't think I'm alone. But everybody's afraid that at $190 a ticket, they don't want to say bad things about Hamilton. Is it worth $400 for the two of you? Almost certainly yes.
So, this is the most negative sounding rave review I've ever heard, because it's worth $400 for two people, and yet I can only talk about the small things that I didn't
you know
for.
Why Griff? Because the
because,
first
because yeah.
Because I think the first act is that good.
Yeah,
I think the second act they could have cut. It's with 10:30.
Fair enough. No, hey, I mean, it's gotten its fair share of accolades.
Yeah,
I suppose.
Really, it can survive me.
I guess
it's 10:30. Domitee's got your news. That's next. This is WGN.
Where it's snowing all winter through.
What saved us with this snow is the
snowball throwing
temperature. The salt's been working well. The roads are pretty passable where the plows have been, that's for sure. It's 10:40 on WGN. This is John Williams. Tom Skilling told us late this week that if we had snow Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we'd break or tie the all-time record for consecutive days of snow in Chicago at 9. 9 times we've had snow, and that'll tie a record set. Well, it'll be the all-time record. It's 10:40 on WGN. So we're about to wrap up this version of the John Williams Saturday Show. In 5 minutes, we'll get you to Northwestern basketball. They take on Maryland. Dave Bennett will have the call at 11 o'clock. Pre-game coverage at 10:45. So we won't be able to do the broadcast of the Mincing Rascals podcast. I'll give you a 2-minute sample, though, of what you'll be able to hear if you're a regular listener to the podcast, The Mincing Rascals. I hope you subscribe to it. It's free, of course, and we always post it on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John. Today, Steve Bertrand and Eric Zorn, the columnist for the Chicago Tribune, joined me to talk about a number of things, including that Jeannie Ives ad that seems to be everywhere these days.
Thank you, Bruce Browner.
Thank you for signing legislation that lets me use the girls' bathroom.
Who says girls' bathroom except for elementary school teachers? And I mean, when you're adults, you use men's and women's rooms. First of all, you tried to use the proper pronoun there, John. I think it was pretty clear that the producers of this ad hired a guy and had him put on a dress.
To be clear, call that person a woman. That's how she would identify.
But I don't think that actor is.
Were she authentically transgender? But right. I don't think she is.
We asked her. So we asked Jeannie Ives, and she said that the man was an actor.
They chose somebody with a deep voice
who
looks like a guy threw on a dress so he could get into the little girl's bathroom. Basically, that was the point of this ad, which is why it's so basically inflammatory. It sheds no light on this issue. The other thing is that the legislation that Bruce Rauner signed had nothing to do with bathrooms or locker rooms or any of the issues that have got people exercised. This ad was designed to be very provocative. It was designed to get people riled up. It was designed to make people like me, start clutching our pearls. And I think that it might end up being a brilliant move on her part because it gets her the kind of attention that she needs because she doesn't have a ton of money. Or it might be a disaster because she did get a lot of good publicity. She performed very well at the Tribune editorial board debate with Rauner. There was a lot of buzz about her last week. And all of a sudden, all that buzz became much more about this controversy. And people are saying, is she too far?
Well, the buzz continued on Super Bowl Sunday. She paid for a biographical ad that ran during the football game. And I was with women watching the game, like, oh, who's this? She had that going for her. That wasn't maybe truly who she was. And now she's running radio spots now.
Mm-hmm.
And correct me if I'm wrong, John, but isn't the first line, now that I've got your attention?
I was just going to point that out.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah. She sees it as a means to an end.
Right. So she poked, and now people are listening.
You sure are. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. Thank you, Eric Zorn. It's about a half-hour podcast. We talked about that. We talked about things state, local, and national. You can imagine what all of that is. Eric Zorn said that that ad campaign by Jeannie Ives is brilliantly dreadful or dreadfully brilliant. But he said that she's taking a page from the Trump playbook. And who knows, maybe that will work. I was listening to Roe and Anna again. Their show follows mine yesterday. And they and some smart people in the studio were saying they see it as a Biss Ives race. And I did not see that coming, but that would be unpredictable. That would be different. I mean, neither of them are billionaires or zillionaires, and I would have imagined both of them dark horses when the thing started. That's from the Mincing Rascals podcast. It's on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John on Facebook. Also on my Facebook page, I'd hope to play a little of the audio for you here. I don't have time now. We're about ready for that basketball game. But you'll be able to hear about a 10-minute podcast that we recorded with Sue Kelly from Kelly Cruises. Kelly Cruises frequently sponsors trips here on WGN Radio, and I've led about 10 of them. We've got another one coming up in March or April. It's coming up real soon, but you can still get a ticket on it. And this is a Mediterranean cruise on what is billed as the most luxurious ship at sea. So Sue and I just had a nice conversation about that. If you've already signed up, you'll love the conversation. And if that at all whets your appetite, looking out at the snow, you think, oh, Spain, France, and Italy in warm weather. Thank you, Griffin. April 23rd. Sound pretty good right now. Then check that conversation out on my Facebook as well. And producer Griff, you owe us another 7 movies. We'll post this weekend. Griff's quest to watch a movie a day in 2018 continues. As we continue now on WGN Radio.